You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, we talk to you about your memories of the technology of the recent past, whether you miss it or you were happy to see it go away, from landline phones to modems and beyond. Now, state lawmakers are working on legislation that would overhaul the way public school students in Wisconsin are taught how to read. Among other changes, it would shift the state from its current reading education system known as balanced literacy and instead implement what's called a science of reading approach that's more phonics-based. Assembly Republicans modeled parts of the plan after a similar change in Mississippi that saw fourth-grade reading test scores improve in that state. Governor Evers' office said he wouldn't sign the bill in its current form, in part because of concerns over a requirement that students would have to repeat third-grade reading lessons if they test poorly at that age. We're learning more about how children learn to read and what impact this legislation could have, and you could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think Wisconsin needs to change the way we teach reading to students? What changes, if any, would you like to see? Would you support a switch back to more of a phonics-based system? Parents, teachers, students love to hear from you about this. Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Mark Seidenberg is Vilas Professor and Donald O. Hebb Professor of Psychology at UW-Madison. He researches how children acquire reading skills and how the science of reading can help improve educational performance. Mark, welcome back to Central Time.
Hi, glad to be here.
And Rich Halverson is Professor of Educational Leadership and Policy Analysis at the UW-Madison School of Education. Rich, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you.
Can you start us off, Rich, by kind of defining the two broadly different approaches to reading that we're calling balanced literacy and science of reading?
Well, yeah, thank you for the invite to talk about this. I feel like this is sort of a false dichotomy. Mm-hmm. There's the idea of balanced literacy is a balance of how we teach literacy. And one of the problems with the idea of balanced literacy is that it's not very well defined. So the kinds of skills and the kind of practices that get included in balanced literacy vary from district to district and classroom to classroom. And I think one of the big contributions that the science of reading has done for us in recent years, largely led by Professor Seidenberg's work, is to help us specify the kinds of skills and practices that are necessary to help early readers gain proficiency in reading. So I don't really see that there's a contrast between balanced literacy and the science of reading if a balanced literacy approach includes the key components that have been researched recently in the science of reading.
Mark, can you talk about those key components? What do we know from research is key for at least most kids in getting those initial skills?
I have to speak first to a point about which I disagree with Rich a lot. I think it's pretty clear what balanced literacy is. It's been around for about 30 years. And the legislation that's proposed in Wisconsin and that's been adopted in about 35 other states is trying to correct the problems that ensued when there was wholesale adoption of the approach that's called balanced literacy, whole language. So I think it's pretty clear what that involves. And we're not talking about adding a little phonics component to an existing approach that was otherwise successful. It was not otherwise successful. If it had been successful, we wouldn't be having this discussion. And also, you know, we wouldn't be in a situation in which we're asking state governments in Wisconsin, like in many other states, to solve instructional issues for us. It should have been that we were able to come up with these kinds of solutions on our own, working with various people in education and people in science working together, and that did not happen. So this is really a pretty clear rejection of traditional whole language. It is based on the idea that kids who are starting to read actually need some instruction in order to get off the ground, and they won't just pick it up the way that they were assumed to pick it up in the whole language kind of approach. It does include some phonics, which is teaching kids about how spelling relates to spoken language, but it's not just about phonics. It's about all of those basic skills that you need in order to be able to recognize printed words and understand them individually and in combinations that make for meaningful sentences. So the instruction with young children has to focus on them learning about this new code that represents language in a new way so that they can kind of get off the ground and begin to benefit from print and learn from their own kinds of reading experiences.
So, Rich, Mark making the case that there is a bigger distinction. It's not so much of a continuum, at least as practiced under state laws now. What do you think?
Again, I think that balanced literacy is a generic term. And in the 2000s and the early 2010s, I did a number of studies in the state of Wisconsin about data-driven instruction in schools. And much of the data-driven work was focused on improving early literacy practices. And most of the schools that we looked at had adopted a balanced literacy approach, but have focused on programs like the Orton-Gillingham approach and structured literacy approaches as part of their balanced literacy perspective. I think what's happened over time, especially during COVID, is that there's parts of literacy instruction that have traditionally required lots of intense interaction between students and learners. And then there's other parts of literacy instruction that are more student-driven, where students will read and they will express themselves, writing and performance and so forth. And what happened during the COVID pandemic was there was a drop-off in schools' ability to deliver the sort of rich interpersonal work that is a highlight of the many aspects of the science of reading approach. And I really think that the bill that is under discussion helps to restore those practices to the forefront of our reading instruction and really create a kind of literacy programs that work for all children.
Mark, do you see this, our current concerns about reading as being largely driven by what we lost during COVID? Or were you, you were concerned about this, I think, pre-COVID. Can you share what you thought even before those COVID-related disruptions?
Well, COVID just made things worse. But, the issues that we're talking about have existed in this country and in this state for a very long time, with people writing about it and trying to change practices in education over several decades. The reform movement finally caught fire this time because not because of COVID, it was catching fire before that. There's much more public awareness of the issues, how serious they are. There's much more awareness of how the practices, the ways in which popular practices were based on mistaken assumptions about how reading works and how children learn. One of the things about social media and the internet is that you can get information about what's going on much more easily than you could in 1980 or 1990. So the situation has basically been the same. There's always been, for as long as people have been collecting the data, a very large percentage of children who are not reading at grade level, who are not reading adequately for their ages, and especially in certain populations being especially at risk, namely kids from lower income backgrounds and minority kids. So this is a long-standing problem, and then COVID came along and was a disaster that made all of these things even worse. Where everyone is trying to get back on a firm footing. What's happening in Wisconsin is really following what's happened in many, many other states. We're kind of coming in relatively late here, which perhaps that'll be a good thing because we can benefit from the experiences in other states. But there's a feeling that enough is enough. There are too many kids who are just not being taught to read. They're just expected to kind of get it. And that wasn't sufficient. And, many of the practices about literacy and understanding texts and being able to ask questions about texts and so on that were a highlight of balanced literacy and whole language and so on, that's going to be appropriate when the kid can already read. That is, they already have the ability to read a book at a grade level and understand it and start to ask questions about it. So I think we're seeing a really wholesale rejection of very longstanding approaches, and legislation has turned out to be, a key element in that. I think it's also a pretty blunt tool. And so, just allocating money to this and stipulating that kids will be taught to read appropriately isn't sufficient. It this bill is a good thing. It's an investment in elementary education and literacy, but it faces, you know, there's no off the shelf solutions here. We're going to need to be able to train coaches to help teachers in schools. They're going to change the curricula that are used, but you know, I think that's mainly trying to avoid the really bad stuff. It's not as though there's something really terrific on the shelf that everybody should obviously adopt. There's a need for new kinds of the curricula that are in the classrooms, the books, the support materials to also reflect this kind of research and what we know about learning and reading. But that'll come in due time. In the meantime, yes, this is an investment in trying to get more effective instruction to kids at the onset of reading when they're at a crucial point in development.
Talking to UW-Madison psychology professor Mark Seidenberg and UW-Madison educational policy professor Rich Halverson about new legislation that would change the way reading is taught in Wisconsin. Very long story short, more phonics involved in that, at least as envisioned by lawmakers. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What, if anything, do you think needs to change when it comes to teaching reading, especially at the earliest ages in school? If you teach reading, if you have kids in school, if you are a student yourself, what kind of things do you see working or not working? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation, maybe hear from you, coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up the conversation on reading education in Wisconsin and a proposal by Assembly Republicans to change the way we teach students to read. Our guests are from UW-Madison, psychology professor Mark Seidenberg, educational policy professor Rich Halverson. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Let's go to your calls now. Dory is with us in Madison. Dory, hi.
Hi. I'm calling because I'm actually an ethnographer who has been talking to teachers in public schools across Wisconsin. And I've read Professor Seidenberg's work, and I know he has concerns about listening to teachers. But the teachers that I've talked to have been concerned about the replacement of whole language with approaches that are almost exclusively phonics. And I haven't talked to a single teacher who objects to including phonics in a reading program. They're all on board with that. But stories are being squeezed out of reading programs. And I actually have talked to teachers who have been scolded for reading stories to their children in class. And
I doubt
they have a concern. They have children who, in their classes, who have not been read to at home, who don't understand that reading is more than decoding.
Dory, I gotcha. Thanks for the call. Mark, a concern that, you know, if we go only phonics drilling, or if we're going too far, that's an overcorrection.
Yeah, that would be a problem if someone was actually proposing that, but of course they're not. I said a couple of minutes ago, there is an element of phonics in here. The main thing is getting the child the basic kind of foundational skills that include vocabulary, understanding print, being able to spell, a lot of the basics that will then allow the kid to do more interesting and elaborate things with meaningful texts. I don't have a problem talking with teachers. In fact, I'm very, very interested in what teachers say. And what I hear from teachers is that they feel underprepared for the job and that they are supposed to figure out how to teach reading on the job. And that is an extra burden that we place on them, in addition to the many other things we are asking them to do. So what I hear from teachers is that they would like additional guidance. And yes, mandating that certain things be taught is clumsy. That's why I'm not really a fan of legislative solutions. But this is where we are. And we're going to start by doing some really basic things that are important. And hopefully we'll monitor what we're doing and improve and get to the place we really want to be.
Thanks for that call, Dory. Rich, could you talk about the challenges of taking a model, whether it's from legislation or research-based or whatever, and, you know, making sure that teachers are ready and prepared to take it into the classroom?
Yeah, I can. I totally agree with Professor Seidenberg's comments about preparation here. I really believe that our teachers need to know more about how to teach reading. I do think there's sort of like a, not a subtext, but a surrounding narrative going on here. Since about 2012, the state legislature has cut about $4 billion from the education budgets of districts around the state. And now they're considering a $50 million addition to support a specific curricular intervention that they're interested in. And I think to a lot of teachers and to a lot of people in public schools, this sounds disingenuous. You know, like if the legislature hadn't been cutting all along and had been trying to shape the direction of reading instruction while funding schools, this would be a whole different conversation. But I think some of the resistance that's happening here is because it seems a little bit like, oh, now that the legislature has an instructional focus, now they're willing to give a little bit of money and resources. And really, what they're proposing is a lot of assessment and 64 coaches, which, given the number of students who struggle to read in the school in our schools in the state, is a pretty small investment in this really important issue.
Thanks again for that call at 800-642-1234. Let's go back to your calls now. Phyllis is with us in the town of Dunn. Phyllis, hi.
Hi. Well, I totally agree with Professor Seidenberg about the urgency of changing from the current methods, and I want to recommend a different method, not phonics, that worked for me. In 2000, my son was 9 and doing homeschooling, and he hadn't learned to read. And so another mother suggested this book to me called Reading Reflex, and it's put out by Read America, Inc., and they call their method phonographics. And this book gives you just step-by-step instructions. There's things you cut out and use, and it worked so well, so quickly. And then later I taught the neighbor boy to read who had, he was in second grade, and he couldn't really read at all, using this. And they have another book called
Phyllis, I got you. We don't have a ton of time. A mark phonographics. I'm not familiar with that. Is that something you've come across?
There are a lot of programs out there, and people who adopt them in order to teach their own children can often do things that are not possible to do in a classroom. So I'm glad it was that lady was successful, and I believe that she was successful. But you know, we're talking about it. Choosing a curriculum, look, the solution is not going to be in the curriculum that are sold. You have to have a curriculum in the classroom to provide some guidance for the teacher so they're not just making it up as they go along. However, the curricula have been a part of the problem. They've reinforced some really mistaken ideas about how learning works, for example, and how reading works. So the solution is ultimately not going to come from the curricula. It's going to come from teachers who have better training and who have better understanding of certain things that they missed out on when they were taught. Rich did mention something important, though. The bill, the version of the bill that I saw, really was so top heavy on assessment. You know, in the No Child Left Behind days, people were really unhappy about the amount of testing that had to be done in classrooms and how intrusive it was and how distorting it was. I felt that the version of the bill that was being circulated was way top heavy on assessment, as though if you just keep testing the kid every 3 months or something, you'll get such precise information, you'll know exactly what to teach. I don't think that is quite right. There are more efficient ways to do things. Yes, you have to track kids' progress, but no, you don't want it to be just disruptive. So there are things in the current bill, assuming it's still under discussion, that I would change. I also think that they are recommending an investment in a particular kind of professional development program that's called Letters. Letters is used in many states. It's the one that has been around the longest. I think it's really pretty deeply flawed. And so I'd recommend that they actually look to some other approaches that are around. This is for providing additional professional development for teachers who are already on the job.
Thanks again for that call, Heidi. Rich, I wanted to ask about one aspect of this bill as it stands. At one point, it had been, hey, if the third grader can't pass a particular test, they repeat third grade. That's been modified to they repeat the third grade reading program. This seems like a sticking point between the legislature and the executive branch. Your thoughts on that, Rich?
Yeah, definitely. This is a huge issue in this proposed legislation. And I think we have to remember that schools are instructional spaces, but they're also social spaces. It's where young people learn to be together. And there's it's a great difficulty within a school if everybody knows if you're held behind. And the stigmatization that comes with being held behind because you haven't passed a test affects all of your education moving forward. So I feel like I agree with Professor Seidenberg's insights that what we need are high quality professional development opportunities to help teachers learn the skills of the science of reading so that all children can benefit at their grade levels. This idea of holding kids behind on one aspect of schooling creates way more damage than solutions that it provides.
Mark, in our last couple minutes, I saw on your website you wrote, you're all for changing our reading education in more phonics, more fundamental ways in the early years. But you have a concern that people will just have catchphrases, phonics-based or science of reading, and kind of embrace them as an empty shell and lose track of what is actually working, what is actually proven by research. In our last minute or so, can you expand on that a bit?
That's a big challenge. So what we've done is we have a great deal of enthusiasm building an education around a very important idea. There's a lot of research about child development and reading and language that can be drawn upon to develop more effective ways to teach more children successfully. There's not much expertise in this kind of research in education, whether it's the publishers, the schools of education, the people in the DPI who decide what kinds of materials to buy, there isn't a lot of expertise. So what we're seeing is a great deal of enthusiasm around finding out about this research and trying to make good use of it. But it's a kind of, the door is not very wide open yet because people just don't have the background. So it's going to be slow. And my concern is that people will declare victory prematurely. Yes, using this research to improve instruction for all is a great idea. Implementing it is still the challenge. And indeed, I think what we're doing now is kind of on the right track, but it's just interim solutions. So we're going to have to keep working on this for quite a while to get it right.
We'll leave it there. Thanks to both of our guests, Mark Seidenberg, professor of psychology at UW-Madison, and Richard Halverson, professor of educational leadership and policy analysis at the UW-Madison School of Education. They join us today to look at the potential impact of state legislation that would change the way that reading is taught here in Wisconsin. Regular listeners know that I'm a big fan of board games, so I'm always on the lookout for news from the world of games. Here's something. Two of the biggest board games in the world are merging, sort of. When you look at the top-selling board games of all time, after chess and checkers in the top two, you've got Monopoly and Scrabble at numbers 3 and 4. Now the company Winning Moves USA has announced a mashup game in conjunction with Hasbro called Monopoly Scrabble. Not sure exactly how it works. It looks like there's a Scrabble board in the middle with the Monopoly movement track on the edge of the board. If I'm reading it right, you move your piece on the Monopoly board based on the words you spell on the Scrabble board, and some of the premium Scrabble spaces let you take properties right away. Now, the worry of both Scrabble and Monopoly is that they could take too long for what they are. The Monopoly Scrabble announcement uses words like fast-paced. So maybe they've solved that problem. Board game news you can use. This is Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, we'll talk to you about technology from years or decades past that you remember fondly or maybe not so fondly. From landline phones to vinyl records to modems to, well, you tell us. You can call in right now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll take your calls in a few minutes. First, it's time for Wisconsin Life. Just after Father's Day, here's producer Maureen McCollum with a story about biking.
Learning to ride a bike can be a milestone in a person's life. Lately, WPR producer and local dad, Brad Kohlberg, has been thinking about when he first learned how to ride a bike, teaching his daughter to ride, and what biking has meant to his family over the years, all because of a song he recently heard.
There's a band that I've followed on and off since college called Pedro the Lion. and they released a new song a while back called Yellow Bike. It's about getting your first bike and how the world opens up when you learn to ride it. It was a blast of nostalgia for me. It made me think of my first bike, my dad helping me learn to ride, me helping my daughter, and how important bike rides have been for my family over the years.
On a desert Christmas morning, 1981.
I got my first bike on my 6th birthday, a red Murray brand with chrome handlebars and chunky black tires. A bike for popping wheelies and doing sweet jumps. I loved it.
My first two-wheel bicycle stood by the tree. My heart thumping in my chest. Though I tried, I couldn't ride one yet.
The other neighborhood kids rode their bikes around in a little pack all day, and I really wanted to join. But I was embarrassed of the training wheels. So I begged, and my dad took them off, and I ran around pushing my bike beside me, trying to keep up with him. I couldn't.
Out on a street when my dad let go of the seat.
During practice sessions, my dad ran alongside me, gave me a nudge and let go of the seat. I'd coast, try to pedal, crash into the neighbor's mailbox. I even ran over my little brother one day when he wandered into my path and I couldn't steer around him. Sorry, Dave.
But I remember what it was like astride my yellow bike. First freedom, second life, all the places I could ride.
A friend had a bike that was smaller than mine, and my feet could easily touch the ground when I sat on it, which made it easier to coast. I'd ease down my driveway on his bike with my feet dangling to see how far I could go. One afternoon, I put my feet up and started pedaling. And I took off. I was riding. I still feel a little sad that my dad was at work when it finally happened. Sorry, Dad. But I didn't look back. The neighborhood became infinite. A motocross track, a battlefield, a movie set. All the money I made at my first job picking sweet corn went to building better bikes for bigger jumps. And I spent every summer day riding around town with my friends until I got to high school, when it became kid stuff, like overnight. My BMX gathered dust and was forgotten. Fast forward 25 years, and I was running beside my daughter in the church parking lot up the street as she learned to ride her first bike.
Okay, you ready? One, two, three. Go, go, go!
I gave her a nudge, let go of the seat, and watched her pull away from me and turn the corner out of sight. Now she's almost 14, and my old bag of tricks doesn't really work anymore. Legos, backyard baseball, trips to the playground. But she still rides around the neighborhood with me after dinner.
Dad, how long have you been videoing?
We talk a lot while we ride, and sometimes we keep the conversation going with some ice cream afterward. It's the greatest. So when I heard that Pedro the Lion song, you know what I did? I went out and got myself a new BMX bike. A bike for popping wheelies and doing sweet jumps. Because sometimes dads and kids aren't that different. And I feel like a kid when I ride it, with my daughter beside me. It's the greatest.
I trade my kingdom for someone to ride with.
Brad Kohlberg is a producer for WPR in Madison. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook. I'm Maureen McCollum.
This is Central Time. Now, we want to hear from you about technology of the past years or decades that's gone away or declined in use. Is there something that you miss or is something you're glad has gone away? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You may be asking, Rob, where's this coming from? I started thinking about this last week when I talked about an experimental car from Toyota that would simulate driving a stick shift, even though it's not a manual transmission car. Then I saw a thing where Atari was releasing a new cartridge game for the Atari 2600 for the first time in over 30 years. Plus, I keep seeing that blogs are making a comeback. Now, those stories got me thinking, what technology from the past do you miss using? What are you glad we've moved away from? Join in now at 800-642-1234. What are some relics of technology that you remember using back in the day, years or decades ago? What old technology do you wish would have stuck around? Do you like whatever replaced it? What are you happy to leave behind and why? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Now, I have a lot of these. One I think about, you know, given my job, is reel-to-reel audio tape. So I first did radio when that was in its last days. So I actually, you know, cut tape with a razor blade and taped it back together with the other kind of tape, sticky tape. That's how you edited stuff back then. I am glad, very glad that I got to do it. Given the opportunity, I would never go back to it from computer digital editing. Don't really miss doing it at all because of all the things that could go wrong. Now, we asked on the Ideas Network Facebook page, got some great examples, and we heard from some WPR colleagues. On Facebook, Joel writes, I still have my old LPs from the 60s and 70s. And we had another Facebook comment where Ed says, my favorite piece of old technology, he gave us a picture of his hand-cranked record player. Now, vinyl is one of those great examples of something that I think people thought was going to go away. But then it didn't, and now it's made a comeback. A lot of people are very happy to still have that vinyl. How about you? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We asked our colleagues here about some of these technology things. Avery Lee Rogers says, I miss hip clips from the 90s. Now, that's the thing. You had it clipped on. It was like a little purse that had room for your cell phone, that fancy new cell phone you might have had. Avery says, I probably wouldn't use them today, but they were so rad. I also miss the first generation iPod Shuffle, the white stick ones. They're just great. I basically memorized, Avery says, the order of all my music so I could find the right stuff since it didn't have a screen, so fun and goofy. That's a positive memory. Jill Nadeau says, I think everybody's with her on this one. I don't miss fax machines. They were a pain to use, hard to read, and most of the faxes were junk. And Jill says, I missed the headline dimmer button that was on the floor of the car. Easier to use. What else do you do with your left foot if you aren't using a manual drive car? Let's talk to you now at 800-642-1234. Lucy is with us in Madison. Lucy, hi.
Hi. This is kind of trivial, but I wish we still had a DVD player in our car. The last two new cars we got didn't have DVD players, and I'm too old to figure out how to download music, so I just have a hard time with it.
So DVD or CD players? Are you talking music or video here?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm talking about CD.
Okay,
CD.
Yeah. Yeah, that it's getting harder and harder to find CD players in the car. And yeah, you have to use some kind of music streaming. I don't know. And it's kind of cool to pop that CD. Did you have one of the changers? Like we had 6 or 8 CDs in the car at a time?
No, I only had what they would only play one, but I could, you know, play some music that I liked. And now I'm like two. It's like I guess I could figure it out if I worked on it, but I don't have time. I feel like I don't have time. I'm just old, and I don't know how to do this, and all the young people know how to do it, but I don't.
So what are you doing? I hope you don't have to just sit there and listen to the radio. Oh, no, wait. I hope you listen to the radio all the time, Lucy.
Yeah, well, I listen to the radio in the car a lot.
Excellent. Lucy, thanks a lot. That's a good one. Yeah, and I mean, thinking back, you've got cassette players, and we actually had a few people here at WPR mention cassette tapes. Aaron Cook says, I actually miss VHS, you know, the video ones, and cassette tapes, not for sound or picture quality, but because there's just something sort of satisfying about physically rewinding them. And making someone a mixtape or CD was super fun and a sure sign of affection. Well, how about you? What technology do you miss, or are you glad it's gone? Join in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Do you want a second one you've heard mentioned already? Is there something from your line of work that you used to use back in the day and now it's gone away, for better or worse? Join in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll pick up the conversation, maybe hear from you, coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk about the good, the bad, and the memorable of old technology. Want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. What memories do you have of using technology that younger people might never have heard of? Do you remember when it was replaced? Were you excited to be done with it? What feelings do you associate with those memories? Call in at 800-642-1234. Here's a sample of a sound you may not miss. All right, we'll let it run only that far. Yes, the modem. I kind of miss it, not the sound, but the fact that you had to do something to be on the internet. Sometimes it's just too easy to get online. Let's go back to your calls now at 800-642-1234. David is with us in Raymond. David, hi.
Hi, this one's going to date me. I feel like I need to disguise my voice. When I was in first grade, my dad gave me a crystal radio kit to put together, and dang it, I made a radio that worked.
That is fantastic. And I remember my dad telling me, putting it together in the barn, the crystal radio set. But it's really cool. You put a piece of cutting edge technology together, and I assume it worked, right, David?
It was wonderful.
Awesome. And if it's not going to date you too much, what do you remember listening to on your homemade radio?
I have no idea. it was just so thrilling to hear sound come over.
That's fantastic, David. That is a classic one. Thank you so much for sharing that. I assume there are still kits out there these days. Thanks for calling in at 800-642-1234. Lori joins us now in Oconomowoc. Lori, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What do you want to share with us?
I miss landline phones. I was probably one of the last people to get a cell phone. I like curling up on a sofa and talking on the phone. I don't like being that accessible. And I also miss the IBM Selectric typewriter. I put myself through college by typing doctoral theses for students. And when computers and word processors came about, that job went away, which is okay. But I miss old things like that.
I gotcha. Now, Lori, with the landline phone, like if you lived with, a family or other people, there's always a thing, like the phone rings, you don't know who it's for. Was that fun for you or confusing or what?
I loved it. No, I loved it. I loved the surprise of that. As I said, I don't think people should be so accessible. And now everyone carries a cell phone around, including myself, but I do it more for medical reasons.
Gotcha.
I don't use the internet, but anyway, I just think some of those things that have gone away for the most part, there's just a wholesomeness about them that I miss.
Lori, thank you so much for sharing that. We had a landline phone growing up. The difficulty for me was my voice as a teenager was kind of similar to my dad's voice. And if, say, like a girlfriend called up and he answered and she thought it was me, there were awkward moments. I'll leave it there. There were some awkward moments with the household landline. We are taking your calls and Facebook comments about technologies of the past that you very much miss, that you don't miss at all, or maybe you have mixed feelings about. Join in at 800-642-1234. Julie joins us now in Madison. Julie, hi.
Hi. My first job was in a movie theater, and I got promoted to be a projectionist. And the thing that I missed was building the movies out of, the 7 reels, and they were, huge, 4 feet across, and just, taping them all together was a lot of fun.
Wow. Did you ever mess up and put the wrong reel in the wrong order so the film suddenly jumped forward, 20 minutes or something like that?
I don't remember personally doing that, but I
feel like you'd remember
that. Screening a film when it was out of order, and we were like, I don't think, this doesn't seem right.
Great. What was your favorite movie to projectionize?
I think Inception was a big one that I remember building, and
cool.
It was huge because it was really long. But
awesome.
Everybody loved the ending, so.
Julie, thank you so much. That's a great workplace memory. I love it. Thanks for sharing that at 800-642-1234. Erica is with us now in Lake Tomahawk. Erica, hi.
Hello there. I am mourning the end of the 13-speed transmission. I've been driving trucks since 1972. I turned 69 in a month or two, and the truck I drive has 775,000 on it, and they're getting me a new one. And it's got an automatic, and I'm like, aw, damn.
Yeah, I kind of miss shifting gears in a car. But, yeah, if you're shifting 13 speeds in a truck, it's got to feel like you're really driving truck then, right?
you kind of feel like you're getting somewhere anyway. I mean, you're doing a job of work. It just, and you spend 50 years getting really good at it, and then, well, yeah. We can't find anybody to drive a 13 anymore. We got automatic. Yeah.
And I want to double check this. Did you say 775,000 miles on that one truck?
Indeed. Yeah.
Wow. Is that normal for trucks? I don't know.
Oh yeah, you can go a million. The motor's been apart once, but yeah, that's a million miles is the target.
I got to buy me one of those. That sounds great. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. We're getting your technology memories for better or worse at 800-642-1234. Laura joins us now in Beaver Dam. Laura, hi.
Hi. I wanted the woman that called about the landline. I remember when I was younger, we had our neighbors were all on the same line. There were three or four of us neighbors all on the same line. And I remember when the phone would ring and we'd pick it up and it would be for the neighbor, but then we would sit there very quietly and try to listen in on their conversation and they would be, get off the line. And so we thought we were being all sneaky by covering up the, you know, the speaker part of the phone, but then our hand would move around and you could still hear it, you know, so, but that was my memory. I kind of missed that.
You do. So, I mean, but would you want that now for you to share a line with your neighbors?
I guess it depends on the neighbors. Yeah. It depends on what neighbors I have.
Laura, thank you so much. That's a great memory. Weird. Patrick in Wausau also wanted to bring up the party line. Thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Taking your comments about technology of the past, either a few years ago or a few decades ago. It's gone away. Did you miss it when you went away, or were you happy when it went away? Still time for you to join in if you'd like at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Kyle on the Ideas Network Facebook page says, I still love my N64. Best graphics anywhere. Yeah, old consoles are pretty cool. I mean, the Atari 2600 I mentioned was part of what got this conversation going. We had a couple more plugs for the landline phone. Pete says, I miss not knowing who's calling. It made you get up and answer the phone. Dee Dee says, plain old telephones are great till the invention of robocalls. Also, we heard from some more of our colleagues here. Terry Hoberg says, I miss the sound of cash registers. When I was a little girl, I was fascinated by the cha-ching sound of cash registers. I was in awe of how quickly cashiers could ring in orders with one hand while handling items with the other. But by the time Terry got to become a cashier, it was the computer stuff. So Terry lost interest. Brian Butler also brings up the old audio cassette tapes and cassette recorders. Mixtape culture was a lot more fun, Brian says, than a shared Spotify playlist. Not quite the same. Back to your calls now. Rebecca is with us in Mineral Point. Rebecca, hi.
Hello. I wanted to tell you that I'm a 70s kid, and I grew up right on the beginning of technology. And I remember when faxes became a thing, and all of a sudden, just the day before, like you could mail something and someone was fine with it taking a couple days in the mail, all of a sudden it had to be in 5 minutes. So that what I remember is the technology pushed us into something that just isn't even human scale anymore. And now you can get 10,000 faxes or 10,000 emails in a day. So I miss the pace, but I like the technology, but I miss the more human scale pace of the old day.
Interesting. Rebecca, thank you so much. That's a great perspective on that about the pace. Kate Sullivan here at WPR says, I miss having a thumbprint work as entry passcode on my iPhone. It's hard to have your face recognized, Kate says, when you're half asleep. Thumbprint just seems so easy. I never bothered, I never even set up thumbprint or face. I just use my cheesy passcode. Carrie is with us now in Cronenwetter. Carrie, hi.
Hello. Well, my vote is for the landline as well. Nowadays, it's young children can't run to answer the phone anymore because the parents have the cell phones. Mm-hmm. So until they're at an age where they have their own phone, you can't make a call and have your grandchild or someone pick up the phone and talk to them. You have to go through a parent, and that whole fun of, wondering if your grandchild or child or someone is going to answer the phone is gone.
Well, it was an interesting etiquette lesson too, teaching kids how to answer the phone, right?
Exactly.
Carrie, thank you so much. That's another great example. Probably not time for another call. Thank you for all your calls at 800-642-1234. I don't need to keep saying the number. We're done taking the calls. Thanks for all your calls about technology of the past that you miss or don't. You can keep sharing more of them, though. You can email ideas@WPR.org. If you still use that piece of technology, or you could post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Love to hear from some more of you about those pieces of technology that you miss. We got a comment about an 8-track tape. One of our colleagues mentioned that too. Yeah, I don't miss those. Those were not very convenient. Coming up tomorrow here on Central Time, take a tour of climate hotspots around the world and what they mean for our future. We'll meet the author of the new book, A Traveler's Guide to the End of the World. Plus an update on the 2-year state budget system and what is in the works. That and more coming up tomorrow here on Central Time.